Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
I think it's going to be like a little war. So, yeah, I'm ready for that.
There is Jiří Kulik, part of Prospects Challenge, and he is ready to go under Lindy Ruff when this all gets even more real than the current scenario. You're all smiles, Marty. What's up?
I'm all smiles because I think that was like, you're obviously like, you're a player. You come in like my first training camp with the New York Rangers. I'm asking around, what's Tortorella like? Like, what's happening here? Like, what should I be ready for camp? And so nobody has experienced a camp under Lindy Ruff. So this is all hearsay. This is all, I talked to some, maybe, I don't know. I said something to Alex Tuch about it. And then he's like, hey, Marty said like, camps used to be tough. They used to do 10 laps around the rink for fitness tests and this and that. It's changed, but I think just the thought of, I don't want to call it the fear factor, but everybody's sitting a little straighter because they heard stories and the way that Jiří mentioned it, it makes me chuckle because it could be a hard camp, but that doesn't mean that you get off the ice and run to the garbage can because, you know, you're going to feel sick. Like, that's not, may not be that, but it could still be a hard camp. Like, I feel like there's, it makes me laugh because of what he said.
Well, what do you think his perception is and what do you think reality is?
I think his perception is that, oh man, like, back in the days, they did 2-a-days, 3-a-days, and workouts in between, and the gear wasn't
drying. He's not naive enough to know that that's real.
But that's almost like how the way that he's talking would remind somebody of that era. Like, okay, I get it. There's rules in place.
Right.
You know, you're not running your team into the ground. Could it be challenging? Yeah. Could it be, let's battle, let's be up-tempo? Absolutely. It's still, you know, an NHL training camp in 2024. It's not an NHL training camp in 1984. Like, that's the difference.
Well, the problem is there is no difference because literally every coach that you listen to, and this is not a slight on any of them, it doesn't matter what level they're at, they all say the exact same thing when it comes to what they want their identity to be. So I'm curious to know how that impacts a player. Because even on the most honest days, players are going to tell you there's really not that much difference between teams. But in the cliche world of sports, like, there is no difference. Like, every single coach, hard work, fast, this, smart, right? And it's the exact same. Like, it's, you can tell it maybe kind of gets to me a little bit.
But but you know what is funny is that every coach is saying it. But the players, I feel and I believe the players know when it's a little bit of a fraud or if it's a little bit more real. Like, I went to Philly. John Stevens was the head coach. And John Stevens was trying to run a training camp like John Tortorella. We had to do 3-mile run. We had to do the skate test. We had to do the beep test. We had to do all of that. And yeah, those are hard physically. But was training camp hard? Nah, it wasn't that hard. Was he like coming in and yelling and screaming and guys were like feeling like they had to put everything out there every day? Absolutely not. Because John Stevens wasn't that kind of guy. He was an evenly spoken, mild spoken type of guy. Like, if he raised his voice, we're like, eh, he's a bit of a phony now. He's playing the game. Like, it's not real. Like, Tortorella was different. I've been listening to Marty St. Louis in Montreal talking about, you know what, like, the honeymoon period is over. Now, you know, it's not about you're nice and you're good and this. Now it's about, I got to push those guys. I got to crack the whip type of thing, like a coach would say. And but I you talk around and you're like, Marty St. Louis doesn't have the track record that Lindy Ruff or John Tortorella or Daryl Sutter or those guys have to say, oh, we know what that's going to be like. So I think that you can kind of see in Marty St. Louis, it's like, I'll believe it when I see it. The difference with Lindy Ruff is that I think, you know, and you can see and maybe talk to others that have experienced, you know what? Yeah, it is a little bit more challenging. It is a little bit harder than maybe other coaches. That's the thing. So is there a one is easy, 10 is hard. Is there that big of a gap? No, everybody's pretty much in the middle, but there's still a difference between certain coaches that have done it and the coaches that pretend to want to do it, but have never done it.
I'm struggling with this. I'm wondering why players think a coach is pretending. Like, I'm wondering why there's a disconnect in a respect level here.
It's not a disconnect in the respect level. It's just like, I respected John Stevens like a lot. As a coach, he was great. He was a great tactician. His game plans were always good. But if we came in the room, and it's going to happen, where we had a tough first period, I would have been more ready to take in if John Stevens came in and was like, guys, we're going to switch our system. This is not working. This is how we're going to get it done, because that was his strength. And if at times it did that and it was like, good, okay, let's respond, right? If he came in and threw a couple of Gatorade bottles around and yelled at a couple of guys, it almost felt like, he's trying too hard. And look, everybody goes through that. It's maybe not in your identity as a person to be an angry person, to be, or sometimes it's not in your identity to want to just be even keel, right? You got to be yourself. I have experienced Lindy Ruff, but 20 years ago, it's not the same thing now. All I can say is that I think Lindy inside of him is still himself. He's still an intense, competitive person that sometime a gasket or two is going to come right out and the skin's going to be red and the steam's going to come out. That's who he is. I think that's what people have been hearing. That's why Yuri Kulik, who doesn't even know like Lindy as a coach in Buffalo, maybe he knows Lindy as a coach in New Jersey and as an assistant coach in New York, he's heard things. But as a coach in Buffalo, he doesn't know that. Maybe the questions are misleading a little bit because the media has been around from when Lindy was a coach. So you're kind of putting that out there. But I think it's about being true to your identity. And Lindy, even if he doesn't yell on the ice or if he's not cracking the whip, I think there's an identity factor in him. It's just the way it is.
Do you understand where I'm coming from?
Yeah, because I think the biggest thing, and I think Craig Berube said that when he got hired in Toronto. They were talking about accountability and intensity, and he says,
right. So if Craig Berube wins the cup and then the Blues don't do anything under him, so where's the accountability, and how did all of a sudden he become a bad coach?
Yeah,
and well, why exactly is Marty St. Louis in the top five in longest tenured coaches in the NHL? Because it seems to me like the players end up not respecting the coach in a very quick manner. And that's why the cycle continues.
The cycle has been really, really quick of late. We had the team of the day yesterday, Tampa Bay Lightning and John Cooper. And that's longest tenure. And it's like, wow. Okay. But you know, maybe he's more the exception to the rule, and maybe he's had the right people there, right? Maybe he's had the right leadership. Craig Berube got hired in Toronto. He goes, if the coach has to come in to put in the accountability, we have a problem. The accountability starts with one player holding another player accountable. That other player holds one player accountable. And then the locker room holds each other accountable. Yes, I talk about John Tortorella, and I really love playing for Torts in New York. But when I came into the locker room, the number one person that was holding people accountable was Henrik Lundqvist. He was the goalie, which was unique and different. But Hank, in his hard work, in his preparation, in his desire to win, he was holding everybody accountable. Then it became Ryan Callahan, the captain, Dan Girardi, an assistant captain, all those guys, right? Ryan McDonough, Mark Stahl. Like, it became that group, but it started with one, and then it spreads out to everybody. If Torts didn't have Hank, like, Torts is only Torts. You know, you come in, you yell, and then he turns around, and guys are like, what is he talking
about? Well, who does Lindy have now then?
Well, that to me is going to be the interesting part. Who's going to be that person that's going to, you know, have that voice in the locker room? I think Rasmus Dahlin is a person that I would look to. Dahls has been here longer. He's shown over the last few years how he wants to take a step forward. The intensity, and sometimes, you know, He gets angry. He gets mad, slams his stick, whatever. Makes mistakes. I get it. I think Rasmus Dahlin's going to be a guy. I think Alex Tuck's going to be a guy. I want to see Tage Thompson respond to that now. Like, Tage was one to say things last year when he mentioned, we need a harder, more accountable type coach or whatnot. Okay. Well, I want to see it from you. So I like, there's a few guys that are primed to fit in that role, but I want to see. But I think Dahlin and Tuck are probably my top two guys.
I feel like last year you talked about Cousins a lot, though.
Yeah, I did. And Cousins, this is my goalie mentality maybe coming back in. Sometimes you have to worry about yourself before you worry about others. And I think Dylan Cousins has to do that this year. Has to get himself straight on the highway to where he wants to go. And once he's got the cruise control and the autopilot on, then okay, start to, bring the accountability.
I don't want autopilot. I think that's a bad label for anybody.
Okay. When you're comfortably,
I need you to unexpectedly veer out of your lane.
Yeah, well, that happens.
In situations that require it.
When you take the express train in Germany and you're going 100 and plus miles an hour and you're going to your location and you're mm-hmm. on the road and you know you're getting there, okay, mm-hmm. because you've put in the work, you've looked at yourself, now you can start bringing others with you. I think Cousins has to do that this year. He has to, I don't want to say be selfish, but take care of yourself first. Put your mask on first, then put the mask of others. I think that's kind of like where Cousins needs to be at the start of the season.
You know what self-abuse exercise I put myself through before this show?
Oh, did you redo your Utah hockey club? Just to make sure you were ready for that team.
No, I had a bonfire the other night and used it for kindling. No, I'm kidding. Oh. I decided to go back through the box scores of the Amerks playoff series with Syracuse.
Oh, I don't know why you would do that.
Just to remind myself how close it actually was, and yet in some of the worst moments, how far it felt like they were from the crunch. And obviously, why would I do that? You're sitting there asking. Good question.
Oh, because it's Prospect Challenge, it's Prospect and a lot of Challenge. Those guys we're, are playing.
We're revisiting some of the, Kulik, Roseanne, Austin, Wahlberg moments, Trip Ryan Johnson, whatever. So first game, they sneak one out. They had the lead squandered, yeah. Second game.
Was that an OT game one? Was that an OT game one?
No. They had a two-goal lead, lost in overtime.
Okay.
Third game, they were outshot almost 2-1. Like, we're talking like 60-30.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the Markable Fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Right. Levi they was lost really in good. Double overtime, so you could say they deserve to lose. But I remember there was a horrific missed interference play right before the winning goal in double overtime. Yeah. Game four, they were down 3-0, looked like the series was over, came back, rallied. Brett Murray wins it in overtime, right?
Yeah.
And even though game five was like the worst version of hockey circa 2004, Marty San Luis, like the shots were 20-18. It was just gross, right? They were one goal down with 5 minutes left. So it was an interesting series just to put into context what our lead talker today, Jura Kulik, went through and all the rest of them, right? Like that, the finest line here. And, at the end of the day, the narrative was, well, Syracuse is this and older and blah, blah, blah. It's like what we were just talking about with coaching. Like, there isn't really much difference here, right? Like, there's very, very, very little. And that's why everybody is, I think, there's so much attention on Lindy in the sense of how can he cause the players to impact each other in the way that gives you literally, it might only be 1% more. Who knows? I don't know how you define something like that.
Yeah.
But they were 1 point out a couple of years ago, and they were 7 last year. So,
but is because you went back to that, And now it makes me think of Seth Appert and his impact on the coaching staff. I'm thinking Seth is that kind of guy that has intensity inside of him in the different way that Lindy does. Mm-hmm. Like, I can see if Seth came into the room and decided to raise his level, thinking guys are sitting a little bit straighter. Not, oh, crap. Like, it's not forced. Right. It's not phony. It's Seth Appert being intense and being, you know, a little bit more like, I want to grab everybody and let's go. But Seth also has that approach where he's very good communicator and likes to spend one-on-one with guys. And I think there's that combination of Lindy, Seth, and the coaching staff is going to be an interesting one to see who gets the best and the most out of one individual. Maybe Lindy Ruff gets more to Alex Tuck because Tuck, he remembers the years of living next to Tim Connelly and watching Briere and Drury, and that relates to him. But maybe Seth can come in with Quinn and Paterka and Cousins maybe in a different way and have that impact.
Yeah, and I'm glad you said Quinn and Paterka because, we're sitting here in this window wondering how many, if any, of the Amerks from last year can make their way in. And then in that case, obviously, there would be even more of a natural relationship between Seth Appert and some of this year's Buffalo Sabres. Of course, team of the day is Toronto. They've had a coaching change as well. Craig Berube is in. Look, the Leafs make the playoffs every year under Austin Matthews. It's a coin flip every year in the first round. The coin flipped their way two seasons ago. It did not last year. They lost in Game 7 in overtime, thanks to David Pastrnak. I get it. They're going to get roasted every year that they don't win because they haven't won since 67. I think they're an incredibly good team. You have said that repeatedly this offseason, despite underwhelming change, obviously, to their roster. The bigger change will presumably happen next summer.
Yep.
Once we know the long-term future of Mitch Marner and even the short-term next contract of John Tavares, right? Like, it's there's no reason to think that he wouldn't come back now on a shorter term to help them, right? So what do you?
It could be because depends on how the Leafs do this year. And did they lose a lot? Yeah. They lost Noah Gregor, Tyler Bertuzzi, Jake Muzzin, obviously, John Klingberg, TJ Brody, Samsonov, Lubushkin, Edmondson, and coach Sheldon Keefe. But I feel like what they brought in, like, their offense was great. Second in the league in goals per game. Why? Because it's Matthews, Marner, Nylander, whatever. Like, that's the offense. Their power play was seventh in the league. Tavares in there. Yeah, power play seventh in the league. That's great. Like, goals against per game was 21st and PK was 23rd. So what does Brett Treliving and Brendan Shanahan do? They go get Tanev. They go get Edmund Larson. They sign Akinpah. Finally, it got done today. So Akinpah is now, you know, signed for 1 year. But they added on the back end in a defensive role. They know they're going to score goals. They have Joseph Woll as their starter now with Anthony Stolarz as a 1B option. They still have Matt Murray in the fold, but that's more like, you know, if something really bad happens to the other two, in my opinion. But they want to protect their young goaltender. They want to get better defensively. They know they're still going to score a ton of goals. They're going to have the offense. So that's why I think even though you lost a lot of people roster-wise, they'll replace those and they focus on what was needed in Toronto, which is the big difference.
Yeah, I think next to Ottawa, they've had the biggest upgrade in goal in their division because I think Stolarz really helps Woll.
Yeah.
And I honestly don't think they lost that much. I mean, all due respect to the nine names you rattled off, they had almost no impact on the Maple Leafs last year in the big picture. Because in the playoffs, no team other than the Kings performed worse on special teams in the postseason than Toronto. Their vaunted power play, which had been sliding, went down to 5% in the opening round. Mm-hmm. And their PK was like 60% or less even.
Bad.
So it was a bad series for them special teams-wise. So they overhauled the coaching staff. They add some experience on the blue line defensively, like you say, in Tanev. We'll see how OEL does in Toronto. I don't know if he'll have the same impact as he did in Florida. It doesn't really matter, I guess, at this stage. Like, his heyday of being this standout, offensive, clutch overtime scorer, you know, which he was, those days are behind him. So we'll see where he finds his place –
And that pressure not being there, I think, is
You can say that. I think it's going to come real fast, Larry Murphy and every other defenseman that's ever played for the Maple Leafs. Like,
I think that the pressure of performing offensively last year in Florida wasn't there, right? And we saw OEL
not offensively,
better.
But I'm saying if he has two bad games defensively, he's not going to want to touch the puck in Toronto. That's the problem.
Let's see how – I think the pressure last year – the less pressure he ended up with last year because it wasn't about him. Early in the season, he did a fantastic job and it, you know, revamped blue line without Montour and Ekblad in Florida, but it wasn't about Oliver Ekman-Larsson. Is it a little bit more about him in Toronto? Yeah, because now he has to do what he did last year in Florida, not what he used to be with Arizona and being able to create a ton of offense. It's more, can you be a steady defenseman like you were in Florida? That's the pressure that comes. It's a different type of pressure being in Toronto, obviously, as well, than what he had dealt with before in his career. So I think he'll be fine there. But I think that the big pressure hat is still on Morgan Rielly, on Austin Matthews, on Marner, Nylander, Tavares. That's still the main core to get things done.
Yeah, and do you suspect that they will get significant impact from Matthew Nyes, Bobby McMahon, and perhaps Easton Cowan?
I think Nyes, yes. I've always been... saying a fan is maybe a little strong, but I appreciate and enjoy watching Matthew Nyes. I've enjoyed watching him develop to where he is now. And I think he's fit in really nicely. And if he plays with Matthews and Marner, or who knows, because they mix that top six quite often. Sometimes Nylander's up there. McMahon may play up there. Like, we don't know. But if you put Nyes, Matthews, Marner, yeah, Matthew Nyes fits perfectly with that. I think that's one thing that you can expect. McMahon, yes, you know, he'll come in, we'll get an opportunity, but now there's a PTO for Max Pacioretty. Is Pacioretty maybe getting a bigger role once everybody basically thinks that Pacioretty is going on a PTO and will sign a contract with the Toronto Maple Leafs? So I think that blocks a youngster, a 19-year-old like Easton Cowan, London Knights. And I thought he may have had a spot with the Leafs. And right now, when I look the Leafs lineup, I think that they already had 13 forwards. And, you know, you got Pacioretty, you got Steven Lawrence on a PTO. I don't know that there's going to be room for Easton Cowan to be able to make that team at 19 years old.
I'm not convinced the last two names you mentioned prior to Cowan will make the team on their PTOs.
Steven Lawrence, I think there's a big question mark because they signed Nick Robertson, right? They've got a lot of bodies there, but I think Pacioretty will be there.
Why do you think Pacioretty will make it?
Because I think Pacioretty will just take a very, very team-friendly kind of low-end deal and will...
Well, I could do that and have no impact on the Maple Leafs. Yeah, he scored four times last year. That's what I'm saying. Like,
he's had to deal
with
Achilles
he's bringing anything
like the last
Maple
2 years.
And you know me, like for the first years of this show, like I was all about Pacioretty's contribution. He's had some terrible luck injury-wise, and I just don't think he's going to be impactful.
I think... the speed is not what it was once was, and the production is not there. But if you give me, can you have, you know, Ryan Reeves or Connor Dewar or David Kampf or Max Pacioretty, I'm going to start the season giving Pacioretty a chance. I would do that. And then if it doesn't work, then something gets done. But I think they would give Pacioretty a chance just to be able to add that piece.
I agree. They will give him the chance. I don't think he will beat out the likes of Easton Cowan and others of the younger mold. And then, because they already have those guys in the fold, I'm just curious whether the Leafs will put some of those guys on waivers to make room for Max Pacioretty. That's all.
And you know what? Maybe I'm a little stubborn when it comes to waivers early in the season, because these guys are all signed. These guys are all like a...
Well, nobody's going to take any of them. That's the whole point. Everybody needs to stop living in fear. No one takes anyone.
I had that conversation the other day with, because Montreal has Lane Hutson and Logan Mailloux, and they have, you know, all these defensemen, and they're like, if you decide to put Struble on waivers, although he doesn't have to clear this year, but even those type of guys, nobody's picking those guys up right now, right? The Baron or whatever, nobody's taking these guys up. So if there's a time to say, let's give Easton Cohen a chance, it's mm-hmm. early at the start of the season, because then if not, he goes back to the juniors and you can't have him for the rest of the year. So right. Yeah, I don't think he makes it. Just because I think they're going to go with the veteran guys, the Pacioretty and others.
Right.
But I think it's going to be interesting to see. And if he does, then it makes the Leafs a little bit more dangerous.
FanFest is Saturday, presented by Coca-Cola Zero Sugar. We have hockey games, skill challenges, player appearances, autograph sessions, and it all runs in conjunction with Hockey Fest, the street hockey tournament out front of Alumni Plaza on Perry Street. That, of course, is this Saturday, 10 to 6. Now, due to road closures at South Park and with the aforementioned Hockey Fest taking place on Perry, we'll have free parking available in the surface lot, which can be accessed at Perry and Baltimore or via Michigan Street. Darren Dreger, are you familiar with that name? He returns to Sabres Live after this.